Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello from the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. And welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program that helps you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz. It's Monday, January 4th, 2016. It was on this day in 1999 that former professional wrestler Jesse "The Body" Ventura was sworn in as governor of Minnesota. And on this day in 2007, the 110th United States Congress opens and elects Nancy Pelosi as the first female Speaker of the House in U.S. history. Today on the program, we'll tell you about plans by China to build its first overseas military base. And we'll tell you the state where Americans and immigrants choose most to move to. Then, as we always do on Mondays, we will bring you the technology report. This week, we'll tell you about the development of a new kind of cloth that dust mites can't pass through. And you'll learn about a new kind of beach mat that provides power to cell phones while at the same time keeping drinks cool. And finally, as we do every weekday, we will present the making of a nation. Today, we will tell you the story of immigration in the United States during the 1800s. So you can see, we have a lot for you today. Every day here on As It Is, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. China plans to build its first overseas military base in the East African nation of Djibouti. Experts say the move is part of a global economic strategy and reflects growing ties with Africa. Mario Ritter tells us more about the plans.
China says the naval base in Djibouti will be a logistics and supply center. It is China's first overseas military installation. The United States, France, and Japan also have bases in Djibouti. The small East African country is close to areas of conflict in Africa, like Somalia and the Sahel, the southern border area of the Sahara Desert. It is on the Gulf of Aden, which is an important global trade route linking the Red Sea to the Indian Ocean. Peking University Professor of International Relations, Wang Dong, says the installation will be needed to protect China's shipping routes. He says it will be used for resupply. China has increased its military activity in Africa over several years. The nation deployed UN peacekeeping troops to South Sudan this year. China has provided ships to anti-piracy patrols in the Gulf of Aden since 2008. But the country's foreign policy has been based on non-interference in other countries' internal affairs. Alex Vines is head of the Africa program at London-based Chatham House. He says the Chinese are experimenting with this new base.
They still want to emphasize that China is different from other powers in Africa, so it's not like France that has military bases in various places, or the US that has a military base at Camp Lemonnier. So they're framing this as just a naval facility. In effect, though, that this is about Chinese experimentation longer term. How will African governments react?
Alexander Neal is a senior fellow at the Institute for Strategic Studies Asia office in Singapore. He says the Chinese are enlarging their footprint in Africa in other ways. China has been developing a foreign trade and investment strategy known as One Belt, One Road. It refers to setting land and maritime trade routes. It is like a modern-day version of the historical Silk Road between China and the West that existed more than 500 years ago. Neal says in the past, China only sought to extract raw materials from Africa. In a shift, he says, China has been building infrastructure, providing interest-free loans, and building business ties and partnerships. Every 3 years, China has doubled its financial support for Africa, from $5 billion in 2006 to $10 billion in 2009, and then to $20 billion in 2012. When Chinese President Xi Jinping was in South Africa last week, he promised $60 billion in loans and aid to Africa. That followed announcements of $156 million in emergency food aid for drought-stricken nations, and a further $60 million for an African Union military rapid response force was also promised. I'm Mario Ritter.
The southern state of Florida is the place where Americans and immigrants choose most to settle. Population continues to move from north to south in the United States. Florida's Office of Economic and Demographic Research predicts the state will add 5 million new residents by 2030. While Florida grows, Illinois, Ohio, and Michigan have lost the largest numbers of residents. More on the research now from Kelly Jean Kelly.
In 2014, Florida's population grew by over 108,000 people. The largest group packing their bags for the Sunshine State are young people right out of college. Young people generally move more for education or for a job, said Stephen Ryer, a population specialist at the University of Florida. Florida is very attractive. It has big metropolitan areas. It has good job opportunities. That's why people are moving to Florida. Florida's population grew over 17% between 2000 and 2010, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. 20% of Florida's population are foreign immigrants, the American Immigration Council reported. Nearly 74% of the immigrants are from Latin America. Another 20% of foreigners relocating are from Europe and Asia. The state's economy is staying healthy due to the population movement. Latino and Asian immigrants are adding $150 billion worth of purchases each year. Other American states that have been named as being attractive by movers were Texas, South Carolina, and North Carolina. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Now, as we do every Monday, we bring you the Technology Report. Today, Jonathan Evans tells us about a new kind of cloth that dust mites won't like, and a beach mat that charges your cell phone at the same time it keeps your drinks cold.
Many people around the world suffer from dust-related allergies. People with allergies have trouble breathing or suffer from tightness in the chest and shortness of breath. Most allergies result mainly from very small creatures called dust mites. Dust mites live in bedding. Now, scientists in Poland say they have successfully tested cloth that the microscopic creatures cannot pass through. Most of us share our beds with thousands of dust mites. Each mite is just 1/3 of a millimeter wide. Along with dust around the home, we breathe in waste from these creatures. Mite droppings contain enzymes called proteases. Enzymes produce chemical reactions in the body. Proteases can cause allergic reactions like breathlessness, coughing, or severe asthma attacks. Dust mites are hard to remove because they can easily pass through small openings in bedding. But that is not the case with the new fabric developed at the Medical University of Łódź in Poland. The fabric stops the mites, but it still lets air pass through the material. Allergy sufferers who tested the cloth say the allergic symptoms were reduced up to 70%. They told the researchers that they can finally sleep normally. Up until now, they could not even lie in their beds because they suffered from asthma attacks and also had trouble breathing and watery eyes. Researchers say repeated washing did not reduce the anti-allergic quality of the new fabric. They expect that after additional testing, it will be ready for the market. Some people do not like being separated from their telephone, even while enjoying a restful holiday at the beach. So, a university student from Lebanon developed a most unusual beach mat. The device both provides power to cell phones and keeps drinks cool. 23-year-old Antoine Saya designed the water-resistant mat he calls Beach Chill. The device can be used to recharge electronic devices. The mat also has refrigeration equipment that can keep drinks cool. Antoine Saya began selling the Beach Chill on social media for $150. He says he has been surprised at the reaction worldwide. He adds that some people like the mat because it is lightweight and easy to carry. Rita Matthew purchased one of the Beach Chills. When I am on the beach, I used to always look around for a charger and never managed to find any, and the water never stays cool, she says. So the Beach Chill mat is great, and has everything in it, even a pocket where I can put a book. The product can also be used in other places, like around the house, swimming pools, and on boats. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Thanks, Jonathan. And now it's time for our popular series, The Making of a Nation. In our last program, we told you the story of the Statue of Liberty. It was given to the United States by the people of France. We call her Lady Liberty. She holds a bright torch high over the harbor of New York City. Millions of immigrants coming to America passed her as they sailed on the ships that carried them to the Immigration Processing Center on Ellis Island. This week, Leo Scully and Maurice Joyce tell the story of immigration in the United States during the 1800s.
American life was changing, and it was changing quickly. Before 1860, the United States had an agricultural economy. After 1860, the country began to change from an agricultural to an industrial economy. In 1860, American shops and factories produced less than $2,000 million worth of goods. 30 years later, in 1890, American factories produced $10,000 million worth. By then, more than 5 million persons were working in factories and mines. Another 3 million had jobs in the building industries and transportation.
Year after year, production continued to increase, and the size of the industrial labor force continued to grow. A great many of the new industrial workers came from American farms. Farm work was hard, and the pay was low. Young men left the family farms as soon as they could. They went to towns and cities to look for an easier and better way of life. Many of them found it in the factories. A young man who worked hard and learned new skills could rise quickly to better and better jobs. This was not only true for farmers, but also for immigrants who came to the United States from foreign countries. They came from many different lands and for many different reasons. But all came with the same hope for a better life in a new world.
In the 1850s, America's Industrial Revolution was just beginning. Factories needed skilled workers, men who knew how to do all the necessary jobs. Factory owners offered high pay to workers who had these skills. British workers had them. Many had spent years in British factories. Pay was poor in Britain, and these skilled workers could get much more money in America. So many of them came, hundreds of thousands. Some factories, even some industries, seemed completely British.
Cloth factories in Falls River, Massachusetts, were filled with young men from Lancashire, England. Most of the workers in the shipyards of San Francisco were from Scotland. Many of the coal miners in America were men from the British mines in Wales. Many were farmers who came to America because they could get land for nothing. They could build new farms for themselves in the rich land of the American West.
One of the best-liked songs in Britain then was a song about the better life in America. Its name, To the West. Its words helped many men decide to make the move to America. To the West, to the land of the free, where mighty Missouri rolls down to the sea. Where a man is a man if he's willing to toil, and the poorest may harvest the fruits of the soil. Where the young may exult and the aged may rest. Away, far away, to the land of the West.
To another group of immigrants, America was the last hope. Ireland in the 1840s suffered one crop failure after another. Hungry men had to leave. In 1850 alone, more than 117,000 people came to the United States from Ireland. Most had no money and little education. To those men and women, America was a magic name.
Throughout Europe, when times were hard, people talked of going to America. In some countries, organizations were formed to help people emigrate to the United States. A Polish farmer wrote to such an organization in Warsaw. I want to go to America, but I have no money. I have nothing but the 10 fingers of my hands, a wife, and 9 children. I have no work at all, although I am strong and healthy and only 45 years old. I have been to many towns and cities in Poland, wherever I could go. Nowhere could I earn much money. I wish to work, but what can I do? I will not steal, and I have no work. So I beg you to accept me for a journey to America.
As the years passed, fewer people were moving to America for a better job. Most were coming now for any job at all. Work was hard to find in any of the cities in Europe. A British lawmaker told Parliament in 1870 that Englishmen were leaving their country not because they wanted to, but because they had to. They could not find work at home. He said that even as he spoke, hundreds were dying of hunger in London and other British cities. They were victims of the new revolution in agriculture and industry. Small family farms were disappearing. In their places rose large, modern farms that could produce much more. New machines took the place of men, and millions of farmers had to look for other work. Some found it in the factories. Industry was growing quickly, but not quickly enough to give jobs to all the farmers out of work.
In the next 10 years, millions of people made the move from Britain, Germany, and the Scandinavian countries. But then, as industry in those countries grew larger and more jobs opened, the flood of immigration began to slow. The immigrants now were coming from southern and eastern Europe. Anti-Jewish feeling swept Russia and Poland. Violence against Jews caused many of them to move to America. In the late 1880s, cholera spread through much of southern Italy. Fear of the disease led many families to leave for the United States. Others left when their governments began building up strong armies. Young men who did not want to be soldiers often escaped by moving to America. Big armies were costly, and many people left because they did not want to pay the high taxes. Whatever the reason, people continued to immigrate to the United States.
These new immigrants were not like those who came earlier. These new immigrants had no skills. Most were unable to read or write. Factory owners found that these Eastern and Southern Europeans were hard workers. They did not protest because the work was hard and the pay was low. They did not demand better working conditions. They did not join unions or strike. Factory owners began to replace higher-paid American and British workers with the new immigrants. Business leaders wanted more of the new workers. They urged the immigrants to write letters to their friends and relatives in the old country. Tell them to come to America, that there are plenty of jobs.
Letters from America brought many more immigrants. The big steamship companies also helped industry to get more of the new workers. They paid thousands of agents throughout Europe to sell tickets for the trip to America. Their efforts meant that steamships bringing grain to Europe could return to America filled with immigrants. They came by the hundreds of thousands, people of all religions from all across Europe. Many remained in New York and other eastern cities, but many others moved westward. They took jobs in the steel factories of Pennsylvania and the coal mines of West Virginia. They worked in the lumber camps of Michigan and in the stockyards and meat packing plants of Chicago.
Within a few years, foreign-born workers held most of the unskilled jobs in many American industries. American workers began to protest. They demanded an end to the flood of immigration. We will tell you about those protests tomorrow on our series, The Making of a Nation, part of our daily broadcast, As It Is. This Making of a Nation program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Leo Scully and Maurice Joyce, and we thank them all. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. Jonathan Evans will be here tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from The Voice of America.